Hi guys, it's post-recording Evie here again, just before the episode gets started. I'm just here to clarify that this episode was recorded right after the Olympic pairs event ended on the 19th of February, and obviously a lot has happened since that date. Since the time this episode was recorded, Russia has invaded Ukraine and has been terrorizing the country and its citizens brutally ever since. In response to the conflict, the ISU announced that no Russian or Belarusian skaters or officials may compete or officiate at any ISU event, which will include the World Championships that are being held later this month in Montpellier, France. The team here at ITL would like to make a stance clear that we thoroughly condemn the heinous attacks on the country of Ukraine by Russia and its forces. We will provide links in the episode description for ways that you can support the people of Ukraine, as well as educate yourself on the situation at hand, and we encourage all of our listeners who can afford to donate to do so. And on that note, please enjoy our last episode of Olympic coverage about the pairs event.
And we're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating and maybe give you +5 GOE along the way. Let's introduce today's hosts.
Hi, I'm Carr, and you have now officially heard me on 3 out of 5 of our Olympic coverage episodes. Here's your veterans discount.
Hello, I'm Kat, and safe to say I can never wish for anything ever again because I think I've reached my karma quota of the year, so happy birthday to me.
No one has ever deserved that more. Except for Swain on themselves.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we were just talking about how, like, signing up for this episode, for me at least, was a complete gamble. Because it was either going to be doom and despair, or cloud nine, everything in the world is amazing, like, figure skating is validated part of the way.
Luckily, we got the latter.
Oh my god.
Thank god.
It would have been so bad. I would not have enjoyed doing, like, an hour of, like, doom commentary.
But luckily, we are in the at least partially good timeline.
This is going to be a very biased podcast towards, and a little bit of a love fest towards, our faves, Soy and Han. You know, if you hadn't already gotten the memo. But I mean, can you think of, like, a more deserving ending, really, for the two of them for this particular portion of their journey? And I guess we could get into the actual meat of, you know, our episode and at least discuss a little bit about, like, pairs this past quad. And I mean, Sway and Han have been the team to beat every single season for the past 6 years, I'd say. I think that because that they've had so many injuries, their status has always been a little bit of a question mark. But in a way, it kind of advantages them a little bit, not knowing exactly where they are and how they're doing yet, because they always just come out and perform. And I was just thinking that this past season, I mean, it's so hard to discuss this quad because there have been so many partial seasons and it's just been such a weird quad with COVID affecting a lot of competitions, but also a lot of skaters and even traveling wise, especially for the Chinese skaters who, you know, China has some pretty strict COVID protocols. So it's been a question mark, really, for a lot of these Chinese skaters on where they can go and whether they'll be competing. But for the most part, every single season, Sui and Han have always been one of the favorites to win worlds or win, you know, the major competitions. And even though they were always going up against different teams, I'd say. Like, in 2019, it was all about James Cypre, right? They were winning everything, won Euros, maybe win their first world title, possibly. I mean, and then we remember how that played out. And then in 2020, it was all about Boykova and Kozlovsky. They were the ones to beat.
The new blood.
Right. And, you know, worlds didn't happen that year. And then in 2021, Mishina and Galiamov came and seized the momentum at Worlds 2021 and just narrowly beat out Sui and Han there. But to them, it was still sort of a shock, remember? I remember that at the time, it was still about, like, oh, maybe, like, the Russian pairs were going to be Sui and Han's biggest challenge. But at the time, it was a little bit of a toss-up between the three of them. And so
I do remember that after Worlds, like, even Mission and Gaiama were like, well, we didn't expect to win here.
Yeah, it was weird.
But I think that a lot of people were expecting Swain Han, but they were injured as well. They had a little injury in the latter part of 2020, so it was a bit of a question mark again. And so it was all about this season. We had sort of a delayed head-to-head in this season because Grand Prix Final being canceled really kind of messed up a lot of narratives and momentums.
It threw so much off.
Yeah, I think because Swain Han had not competed against any of their major rivals during the Grand Prix. So it was going to be all about Grand Prix Final to set up for the Olympics, and then it didn't happen. And then, obviously, like, Swain Han, we're not going to go to four continents. Estonia. Oh, yeah. Four continents, right. And then, but then all the Russian pairs went to Euros, and they seized a lot of momentum there.
Yeah, like, Mishina and Galima broke a world record.
Right. And so, it's been insane, really, to see them being so dominant, despite all of the injuries. And even if they weren't completely undefeated this season, they have, you know, been very strategic about their timing, about when to recover, and I'm just in awe, really. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could have gone wrong this quad.
I kind of like how you pointed out how, like, they have been dominant since, like, you know, you said, like, past five, six years or so, against such a range of competitors, because, you know, the Paris scene comes and goes, you know, came and went during that time, except for them, even with injury and not being at competitions. Just kind of shows how dominant they were.
Yeah, exactly. And pairs is a rough sport. And I think we've been saying for the past, like, 6 years, like, someone tape her ankles up. Like, those ankles need to make it to the Beijing Olympics. Like,
oh my god. It's been a rough past 4 years for Kat and everyone, but mainly Kat.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think that I think that everyone who knows their story and knows what they've been through, can really feel for them. It's not hard to, you know, to make people fall for a team that is just so, so special, but have had so many setbacks and so many question marks.
I want to tell the fun story that, you know, came back to me at, you know, at the Paris event. I'm pretty sure it was 2018 because it was obviously after Pyeongchang when we met that you took me through the history of Chinese pairs all the way back to Yaobin. And, like, it never left me. And, like, you know, watching the pairs event in Beijing and, like, you know, obviously Zhao Hongbo is their coach. Obviously, they are incredibly special in their own way, but, like, in that lineage, they are so special as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they, you know, they carried the legacy of the Chinese pairs tradition really well. And for it to culminate, I mean, it was not easy for them. And to be able to shoulder that kind of pressure, really, nerves of steel, and truly no more deserving.
And, like, even though, you know, they didn't get the gold in Pyeongchang, it kind of, like, that they got it in Beijing, like, you know, on home ice.
Right. And I think that's just why everyone was just praying so hard that it would happen. It's just like, if we had to go through, if they had to go through what they went through in Pyeongchang, because, like, I was mostly so depressed, mostly because listening to their interviews afterwards was just really heartbreaking. I mean, like, it really was just so, so close, but, you know, with the injury. And I think that 4 years of experience, obviously hindsight is 2020, but 4 years of experience and understanding how to deal with the Olympic pressure now, because the first time they went, they were super nervous and very, very tentative. And yes, it was a few very, very, very small errors and a lot of what ifs. Like, what if Tong had landed that double toe? What if they had actually gotten positive GUE on that quad twist? And, you know, what if she hadn't stepped out of the sal? I think everyone likes to blame the sal most of the times because it's their one, like, inconsistent element. But it's like any of those three things, if one of them had not happened, they would have had the gold there.
And having you know, to deal with that and, like, you know, understanding that, you know, sometimes it just doesn't play out the way you want. And, oh, man, just really, really elated for them that they... I've never said anything bad about a quad twist in my life after this day. So I hated the quad twist so much after Pyeongchang. I was just terrified of it. Generally, twists are very terrifying to me. And the fact that they can do a clean one is just, like, out of this world. Like, I can't even describe how insanely difficult that is to do, especially for a team their size. Like, the power that you need... He needs to get that lift into the air, that rotational speed. Like,
he's got to be, like, the most buff man in existence, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, also pray for that man's hips. But yeah, let's talk about other things that had gone on in this quad too before we just go on another rant about Swain Han.
Like, another interesting thing about pairs this past quad is that, like, obviously it's different in ice dance, but in single skating we've seen, like, technical, you know, sort of revolution and, like, you know, increased reward for increased risk in, you know, high risk and high base value elements like quads. But in pairs, we have not seen a lot of that similar growth. Like, you know, it's still not hugely worth it to do quad throws or, you know, quad twist, speak of the devil. However, it should be said that Sui and Han's quad twist was literally what got them gold.
Yeah, and I must say that I have this, I am of the opinion personally that I am not exactly sure if I want pairs to move in the direction of having more pairs try quads. Because the issue here is that I appreciate every team, every skater that is pushing technical boundaries. But it, particularly in the ladies event, we've seen that if you get the high tech content, you automatically, they're just, like, not scored properly. Like, that is my main concern about if we end up having a quad revolution in pairs. Pairs is already super dangerous, and I know that the reason that they keep it, the scores low, is just to, like, you know, prevent injuries and stuff. But I would say that we need to find a balance of having elements that are properly rewarded but then are also scored properly when it comes to the judging, because I am okay with women attempting quads. I think that it is, if women want to go for quads, it is you know, totally up to them, and they should be rewarded for what they put, but they should be rewarded for what they put out on the ice. So if, you know, if there's an under rotation, or, you know, we should just, like, just, you don't have to go crazy on the GOE. You know, we can ding the under rotation, we can ding the edge calls, and then we can also maybe ding the PCS if there's, like, a ton of quads, you know? Like, that's my big issue. And then when you also have teams or skaters that are attempting all these quads, you know, there's going to be a lot more falls and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, look at the men.
Oh, God.
The men doing all of the quads and then just, you know, it creates for a lot of, like, messy programs. I do appreciate that in the pairs, there is some incentive to try to go clean. There just is a better impression in your mind, you know, of, especially because pairs can be so messy already. I do appreciate that pairs are trying to be, like, Sui and Han have been trying to be innovative in their choreography, trying to get all the levels and trying to, you know, go clean. Again, I'm not too into the numbers about all of this stuff, but that's, like, my main concern about quads maybe ruining the sanctity of this. I mean, not that there's really any sanctity to talk about in this sport already, as we've already discussed. It feels kind of, like, moot to even point it out. But, you know, I just have zero faith in the judging actually rewarding these elements properly ever. So
it's kind of like how you said Sui and Han push it artistically and, you know, just bits and pieces technically where they can, without, you know, upgrading to incredibly dangerous or hard, like, difficult things. It's proof that you can push it artistically instead of only having to push it technically, like with the current quad revolution in ladies, or, you know, when quads started becoming so common in men's.
But we'll see. You know, the ISU Congress at the start of every quad is always interesting. We'll see what rule changes that they're going to end up doing. Maybe they'll end up increasing the base value for quad throws. And, you know, I hope that, you know, I hope that they do, because, you know, it would be really cool to see more quads, and it'd be cool to see teams pushing technical boundaries. But, you know, as long as we don't go wild like what we did in the ladies, like, I think that maybe, hopefully, it'll be a kind of, like, slow growth. That's what I hope for. So that teams can have a chance to incorporate the higher level technical content while also not having to sacrifice their programs.
And also being able to train them safely.
Exactly, right.
Because Paris, like, yeah, like we've said, Paris is already so dangerous.
Yeah, like, can you imagine, like, I don't know, maybe in, like, 8 years or something, like, Paris doing, like, two quad throws and, like, quad toe side by side. Oh, man. No, I mean, it's not gonna happen, like, but yeah.
I just love that, like, you know, the 4 year period that culminates in the Olympics is called a quad, when, like, quad is already such a common word. I love it and I hate it. But anyways, that's your review of Paris this past quad. We'll talk a bit about, you know, more about it later when it comes up. But for now, we get to talk about our medalists.
Yes! So, our Paris medalists, obviously, we have our gold medalists, our Olympic champions, finally, Suwon-ji and Han Song, and a silver medalist, Evgenia Tarasova and Vladimir Morozov, and a bronze, Anastasia Mishina and Alexander Galiamov. And, I mean, again, we've already kind of gone through the emotional turmoil that came with following Sui and Han through the last couple of years, but
there is literally, I just, like, I can't say it in any better words than this, that there is no one like them. Remember when they did that short program of No One Like You, I think it was called?
Yeah, that's
the, like, yeah. Literally, like, yeah, that's, you're right, there's no one like you.
Yes, and I feel like we should probably at least talk about their skates here. I mean, the short program, I think that they kind of seized some momentum from skating in the team event, scoring really well there. And so the judges were able to score them really well in the individual as well. Her throw triple flip in the short program was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. The slow-mo replay just really captures how perfect her landing posture is.
Her expression when she was landing.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm selling this landing to you. It's not that kind of like, oh, thank goodness I made it on one leg kind of feeling sometimes that you get with people land pair throws. It's literally like, yeah, I'm landing it. No worries. Like,
no hesitation going into that or coming out of it.
The running edge, the free leg extension, chest upright, transitions out. Like, you just can't get any better than that. That is the gold standard pairs throw. So, oh man, and, you know, and obviously their free skate, what more to say? Sal's cursed, all of them.
Yeah, but, like, the rest of it was just, like, sublime. I'm not lying in the slightest. I was crying, like, full on, like, not tearing up, crying. Tears were coming down my face less than 10 seconds into the program, because it's so emotional and beautiful, and they just, like, put their whole hearts into it every time.
I think that for, like, this program, I personally had some reservations about this new cut of Bridge Over Troubled Water, just because the original was so iconic that sometimes you know, you're left feeling like, oh man, but what if it doesn't live up to what they were trying to do 5 years ago? But this time, I think that I kind of got it a little bit more. Seeing it here is just, like, the thing that I love about this program is that it shows off, like, both their sensitivity and kind of, like, you know, vulnerability, but it also, like, is really strong, too. Like, they have, like, quiet vulnerability is how I would describe this program. But it's also still imbued with this like kind of power. It really grows at the end. And, you know, this obviously they've said multiple times that this program is symbolic of how, you know, the first time when they skated it was when Jing was coming out of her surgery and Hansung had like supported her through every single step, waited for her.
I might start crying.
Yeah. And this program is like kind of a redux of that. And because Hansung had his surgery last year and he was also recovering, she had supported him in return. And they also said that while they were choreographing, like Lori had also gone through surgery as well. And so she was also going through like a difficult time and they wanted this program. But in that time, Lori had also helped them. And so they wanted this program to be for her as well. So it was just symbolic of how they wanted to be each other's strength and they wanted to be kind of like the bridge that unites the world. And they wanted to be the strength for everyone as well. So it's perfect to me. It's just like how, yeah, it's both sensitive and emotional yet strong. Is how I would describe it. Yeah.
It's vulnerable, but it's not weak. And it's like, you know, like you said, you grew to appreciate the changes because it grew with them and it changed with them. Like, you know, from Pyeongchang and pre-Pyeongchang to Beijing and pre-Beijing. Like, you know, they've grown and, you know, they've changed and they've had different experiences and they were able to show that.
I mean, and the program ends with throw and like two lifts back to back, basically, you know, and those elements are not easy to do at the end of a program. So just having that right there, obviously everyone is very sad, and myself included, that they didn't include the spread eagle into the final lift, but you know, you take what you can get, and it didn't ruin the overall messaging of the program. And so I will accept it here. Obviously there was like, you know, we were all holding our breaths after the Sal step out and eventually downgraded. I was just watching as the TES box went from like 80 to like 78. And I was like, oh no, the Sal got downgraded. I literally was just like, the Sal got downgraded. I was like, please hold, please hold. It was still like 0.6 over. And again, I never said anything bad about quad twists in my life. And because of it, they won on tech. They won on their technical score, which is crazy because, you know, we were saying, I feel like the narrative was the Russians were technically perfect, but Sui and Han owned the PCS score. And then, you know, the PCS gap had like shrunk. So, you know, it could have gone either way, but Sui and Han ended up winning on tech here. So last thing that I just want to like say that, you know, they had mentioned in this interview that this victory felt really full circle because this program had won them their first world title in Helsinki in 2017. And it won them their first Olympic gold at home.
And just to like top it off, like even though this isn't like related to that, like it will never leave me the fact that they literally skated last. They rounded out figure skating at the Olympics.
Truly no more deserved team and no more deserved positioning. And it's crazy how it sometimes just comes down to those last 4 minutes. And what else can you say? Perfect ending for them. So let's move on to the silver medalists. And honestly, very, very, very deserved. Extremely deserved. Perfect. They absolutely deserved this medal. It has been really, really hard for Tarasov and Morozov as well. They have had a lot of ups and downs.
Their struggles don't, like, absolutely start from that quad, you know? Looking back to the past Olympics, they were coming off of a disappointing Olympics where they just missed the podium and ended up in fourth, which I think kind of made it all the sweeter that they were able to change that here and get silver. Like, not only, you know, were they obviously coming off of their quad that was full of inconsistency, you know, but it was sort of a redemption for the last Olympics. It was nice to see.
They have been competing for basically as long as Sui and Han on the senior level. And they have always been bogged down by being inconsistent. They've kind of had this reputation now of doing really well in the short and then kind of bombing the free or vice versa. But mostly it's keeping it together for the free. It's like was their biggest issue. Even if they were able to, you know, land things safely. It's like they run out of steam. That's which is the main issue. And once they make a mistake, then the steam is again just dissipates. That was always the main issue with Tarasov and Morozov. Even despite how beautiful their elements are, how beautiful their lines and their skating are, it's just the inconsistency that has always held them back here. And it's what ended up putting them behind, politically, at least scoring-wise, behind Mishina and Galiamov.
I feel like it's been so long since we've seen two clean programs from them. At least I think they were mostly clean in the free skate. I think she might have wobbled on one of her side-by-side jumps.
For the most part, for pairs, it's considered clean, basically, if you can stand up on everything.
I'm very happy that we got to see two clean programs from them, because one, you know, they're a great team. They have, you know, they are a really good team. They have great elements, you know, very quality elements. And just like, you know, I want them, they've struggled a lot, so I want to see them do well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with them is that it's always been frustrating also at times that they have been so inconsistent. But when they do put it together, the judges are ready to shower them with points. Like, sometimes there are times, like, especially this past Euros, I think it was a little egregious that they still got, like, a plus GOE on a throw that she put a hand down on, you know? Like, and then she still scored over 81. At that time, it was better than Swain Han's season's best, where, like, Swain Han had skated basically clean. But, you know, they are the classic pair team. I say classic, quote unquote, because the judges typically like their matching lines. They're both very tall. They have really great skating skills. They have really gorgeous, huge lifts and twists. Lifts when they go up, at least. They can get kind of dicey sometimes. There has been more than one aborted lift in this, you know, in the past few years, which you would not expect of a top team. Just like really just textbook pair elements. As for side-by-side jumps, those are, you know, on the day. And yeah, I mean, I will say that it's a little, I personally don't know how I feel about them being ahead of Swain Han in the PCS. I'd be probably more salty if Swain Han didn't win, but the fact that is a little confusing to me is that of all the PCS categories that Tarasova and Morozov beat out Swain Han for, it was in performance and interpretation. Swain Han won in composition, skating skills, and transitions, but they gave performance and interpretation to Tarasova and Morozov. And this program, the Lighthouse Free Skate, it is a safe program for them. It works for them because they have such beautiful classic lines. You know, we can appreciate the beauty of their skating, but their faces are not giving me anything.
Yeah, they, like, for lack of a more technical word, they're kind of boring. And, like, they don't have much of a good connection, I think.
The organic connection that exists for Sui and Han doesn't, you don't feel it as real. I mean, obviously, this stuff is more subjective. But, you know, I just think about, you know, like Tong, like even in the Death Spiral, just giving all the expression and doing his best to perform, even, you know, while Wen Jing is spinning around him in the Death Spiral, you know, they're always giving. They're never giving up the performance, even while they're doing their elements. And sometimes with Tarasova and Morozov, it feels like that connection is, like, severed a little bit, especially while they're doing the elements. But their skating and their elements are so beautiful that the judges are like, oh, okay, sure. And also, again, they put it together. That's the main thing. They finally put them together, the two programs. So,
and I think it's putting it together and keeping it together for these two programs that kind of broke up which team between them and Mishina and Galiamov that they wanted to, you know, push. And that kind of leads into how Mishina and Galiamov, who honestly I think we all expected to be the main competition for Soy and Han, considering they held world records, you know, it led to them getting bronze. Mishina and Galiamov, they suffered a bit in the individual event after their performance in the team event, where, if you didn't see, they had an unfortunate fall coming down from the last lift in their free program. And I think it says a lot about consistency that one fall was kind of a huge shock, aside from the fact that it looked like a nasty fall and we were all kind of worried about them afterwards. And it seems that in the Tarasova Morozov versus Mishina Galiamov Rusfed backing battle, there's a possibility that that sort of killed their momentum in the individual event and contributed to that whole scoring backing discourse.
It's interesting to me because if you look at the judges' total scores, three of the judges had Swain Han in first, three of the judges had Tarasova Morozov in first, and three of the judges had Mishina Galiamov. So it felt like the Russian Russian-biased judges didn't know exactly which basket to put their eggs in a little. Like, should we push the team that is more consistent? Because, again, Mishina Galiamov were third after the short program, so they had no idea whether or not Tarasova Morozov were going to deliver. Because then it could have been a case of, oh god, but we want to give, like, more points to Tarasova Morozov. What if they don't perform or deliver in, like, do we want to save the points, whether or not they wanted to save the points for Mishina Galiamov or they wanted to give them to Tarasova Morozov? Basically, it feels like a little bit of the Russian politicking had backfired a little bit in deciding these medal placements, because I think Mishina Galiamov looked a little bit disappointed, and maybe they were not expecting to be placed third. I think they were probably expecting at least silver or gold, given the trajectory of their season. But it ended up playing out the way it played out, and I think that, for the most part at least, I think that the standings are fair. Whether or not I think that, you know, one team in particular should have ranked higher or is better than the other team, maybe. But for the most part, I think that the podium is fine, is correct.
I wanted to add, like, obviously, it kind of led to Tarasova and Morozov silver and Mishina and Galiamov bronze, but, like, you know, with how close the scores were, like, literally, there was 0.63 between gold and silver, Soihan and Tarasova Morozov. Like, it literally, their confusion literally cost them the gold. I think it kind of shows how, like, you know, no one expected Tarasova and Morozov to pull that off.
As for the actual skates, to me, personally, I think that Mishina and Galiamov felt super tentative in the individual event. In particular, Nastia's Euler here. I mean, it always looks bad. I think that we've all accepted that it always looks bad and still gets positive GOE. I mean, I was telling, my dad was watching with me, and my dad literally was like, oh man, that was a really costly error, and that is probably gonna at least reflect in the component scores. And I was like, Dad, look, the box is green. I've been through this before. I mean, you've been through this before. He said the same thing during the team event. it's just always the timing of it looks wrong. Like, it looks off between the two of them when they do those jumps and they still get positive GOEs. But, you know, if you're them, you know how difficult that changing your jump technique is. At this point, you're drilling muscle memory. So if that's just what her muscle memory is telling her to do, she's going to keep doing it. And if she just keeps getting positive GOE on it, why would you stop? You know, that's the logic. Again, going with the whole just scoring things with high base value properly is, again, Euler triple sal is such high base value and is their main technical advantage against the other teams. And you can reward that base value, but we can ding some of the grades of execution. Again, we have discussed this on dance already, but, you know, the politicking basically occurs in the GOE and PCS now. And now that the GOE range is now +5 instead of +3, there's more room for inflation there. So it's just a small example. But yeah, otherwise, you know, I think that they should be happy with their performance. But I think that, again, they felt a little bit more tentative to me in the free skate. The music itself is a little bit low energy for them. I think that because they still cannot, it's mature music, but it's not them. And because they're such a young team, I don't know if this program really suits them that well. It doesn't feel like they skated up to their music. And because the music is a little bit droning, it makes their skating seem that much slower, unfortunately.
However, if you want to enjoy a Michion Galliamont program, watch their gala performance. It was insane. It was so fun.
Kind of reminded me that they're just young teenagers, to be honest. It kind of had that, like, dorky, try-hard teen energy about it.
I think they should try a more fun program.
Yeah. You
know, with that energy, I think they would like it.
But because of Mishina Galiamov's consistency, especially this past season, like, that's the main word associated with them, right? It's consistency. Consistency. They don't miss. It's what had kind of, like, perpetuated their rise over their training mates, especially Boykova and Kozlovsky, who finished fourth here. Boykova and Kozlovsky, unfortunately, were the team that, because of inconsistency, had kind of seen a decline since their really standout season back in 2019-2020. I think that, for me personally, Boykova and Kozlovsky are my pick of the top three Russian pairs. Although I do love very much Tarasov Morozov skating. It's very beautiful. But, you know, they have a special, like, kind of spark to their skating that I really love, Boykova and Kozlovsky. But because of their inconsistency, they'd kind of fallen on the wayside between of the politicking kind of front between Tarasov Morozov, Mishina Galiamov, and them.
It's kind of sad because I think, you know, most of, you know, figure skating fans can agree that, like, you know, they're very engaging to watch. Like, you know, yeah, they lost some of their consistency, but they're very enjoyable both on and off the ice. And, like, you know, once they lost their momentum with the cancellation of Worlds in 2020, you know, the pandemic started, and after the pandemic, Mishina Galiamov came out with, like, you know, they're blazing consistently. And it was just really sad to see them pushed aside. And, like, you know, they kind of looked sad after, they kind of looked upset afterwards in the kiss and cry. Obviously, there were reasons. Like, I can kind of understand why Russ Fed would start backing Mishina and Galiamov over them, but, like, they're just such lovable kids. They're not really kids, but, you know.
I don't really know anything that goes on behind the scenes at all with the Russian pairs. I don't know what their training situation is like, what it's like having, because Mishina and Galiamov are a more recent pair that moved over to Moskovina's training camp in St. Petersburg. And Boykova and Kozlovsky have been with Moskovina for many, many years now. So
it can't be good for them to see it.
It couldn't have been easy for them to accept that they were being kind of pushed aside by the new team. But yeah, they definitely were just really affected by the cancellation of Worlds in 2020. That they had so much momentum going into that season. And I think that the only thing people were talking about in pairs that season was Swainhan versus Boykova and Kozlovsky. Swainhan versus Boykova and Kozlovsky. And I think even Dima in a post, like, free skate interview had mentioned something about how, like, at one point they were getting those scores and hadn't gotten them in a while.
It's like you said, consistency is really the only thing they lose out to, or they lose to Mishina and Galiamov on. And it's, like, kind of heartbreaking because, you know, it's consistency is such a big thing for, you know, backing someone politically.
Grand Prix Final 2019, I remember distinctly that was such a messy pairs event. Like, everyone did really poorly. But the main thing is that Swainhan, it was Swainhan versus Boykova and Kozlovsky was, like, the main head-to-head that everyone was talking about. And Boykova and Kozlovsky ended up finishing fifth. In the free skate there. Fifth in the free skate, fourth overall. And Mishina Galiamov had just kind of unexpectedly made it onto the Grand Prix Final podium in their senior debut season, you know? And again, like, them unexpectedly winning Worlds. Again, just those little things really can seize momentum for a team, can be a make it or break it, especially when your biggest competition are teams from your own country. I think they're still young. And they definitely have another quad in them, another 4 years in them to go on to Milan, and we'll see.
I hope they can kind of get their consistency back.
Next, we got to talk about Peng and Jin, right? I'm just so happy for them that they were able to, like, kind of redeem the experience of not making the free and in Pyeongchang.
They've had a really incredible rise in the past quad.
Yeah, I think they were just one placement off of making the free in the last Olympics, and it was really hard for them, but they really were able to carve a niche for themselves and have these really interesting programs. I don't know how I feel about the short program, but I think that because here they skated it with so much, like, passion and love, like, because they skated it clean, that really was such a moment for me in the short program, even though the program itself... I just want to know what goes on in Marie France's head.
Like, what a combo of songs.
Like, I remember, because I was in the press, I was doing Mix Zone for GP Italy, and they were talking about how they were not sure about the short program at first. Like, and their gut instinct was like, I don't know how I feel about this. I just think that it's interesting to me because they've always had such great short programs. Like, Alegria was so much fun. And Ophelia, one of the best.
Yeah, so Skate Canada 2018 was actually, like, the first time I saw them skate, I think. Because I don't remember if I even watched the pair short program in Pyeongchang. Because I didn't know what I was doing back then. So I think it was, like, the first time I saw them skate and, like, they blew me away with, like, how much fun it was and how, like, good it was. And to this day, it's still one of my favorite programs of all time. It's so good. Yeah, like you said, Alegria is great. Cloud Atlas is great. Their free program here is gorgeous. The Banquet.
I love The Banquet. I love The Banquet free skate. I think that they, you know, this program, I think, means a lot to them. So
her dress is, like, one of the most gorgeous I've ever seen.
It's truly, really, it's really beautiful.
I feel like they've had, like, kind of a wide range of, like, types of programs that they've done, and they are really good at connecting to whatever kind of program it is. Like, one thing I want to shout out about them, or, like, one thing that I love about them is that, like, they kind of stand on their own and, like, differentiate themselves from Sway and Han rather than standing in their shadow. I don't mean that in, like, a shady way towards each team. Like, I don't know if I phrase that well, but, like, you know, I never see anyone look at Peng and Jin and say, like, yeah, but they don't stand up to Sway and Han. You know, because they don't have to. Like, you know, they're great on their own.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's, like, the most important thing as a skater is that you're, like, you don't have to necessarily have all of the best elements or whatever. Like, I think being able to differentiate yourself artistically and stand out on your own speaks a lot, too. The thing that really draws me about Peng and Jin is that they have this, like, really ethereal lightness to their skating. All of their landings feel like they're floating. All of their skating feels, like, very, very light and floating. Their movements very much just, like, elegant and graceful. Whereas Sway and Han can embody that as well. But when I think of their skating, I think more of, like, the sureness and the strength of them is what stands out to me. So, like, it's just, like, the impression that their skating leaves in my mind is very different. And they're both great. And that's not to say that Sway and Han can't skate light and ethereal, and Peng and Jin can't skate, like, you know, strong and powerful. But
they're just different types of skaters.
I'm really happy for them that they were able to skate clean in the short program. And at least keep themselves in contention for, you never know what's going to happen in the free skate, right? You know, any of those pairs having a bad day, like, who knows? I'm just so, so happy. I don't think that they're going to retire yet either. I know that Chinese pairs, like, they like to go for longevity. So if they can keep skating, they'll keep skating. But I'm curious. I really hope that I think that they have more to give. So, and especially because a lot of skaters were robbed of skating and competing these past couple seasons. So
we all deserve that back, including them.
Our sentimental faves, right?
We get to talk about Riku and Ryuichi.
Riku Miura and Ryuichi Kihara. Incredible. 7th place finish. And honestly, could have been higher. 7th place finish, which is the highest position that a Japanese pairs team has placed at the Olympics since forever.
It's just, like, insane. Like, you know, it just speaks to how incredible they are together. And, like, they've clicked so much. This is Ryuichi's 3rd Olympics and his first time qualifying for the free program. It just speaks to, like, you know, he's been, like, keeping, like, the tiny spark of Japanese pairs going as long as he can, and Riku came along and turned it into a flame, and it's just, they're burning so brightly.
I think that they really have a very, very special and lucky partnership that, you know, Ryuichi's tenacity to keep competing after all these years, and Riku's kind of ferocious ambition.
It's like one in a million how they just, like, clicked immediately.
We talk a lot about how happy they look on the ice, and, like, you know, just their performance quality, really. And while I love that very much, and it is very important to me, make no mistake, they are wonderful skaters. You know, their click applies not just to their performance, but their, you know, technical skill as well. You know, they're super fast, and I think that the fact that watching them on a screen, you're like, wow, they look really fast. Like, imagine what it is in real time. They have really good transitions. I really like, I noticed this, like, the first time I saw both of their programs. I really like their transitions into their throws, where, like, he holds her for both of them. And, you know, they have really solid elements overall.
I just love the way that they skate so free. Just, they're so fast. Especially, like, it's crazy to me the improvement in all of their elements in just these short few years that they've been together. You know, we were already shocked that, you know, they were placing on Grand Prix podiums. And even they made it to Grand Prix final, which unfortunately didn't happen. They're absolutely, I will eat my entire hand if they don't end up on a world's podium in the next quad.
I like how you said, like, their skating is kind of free. One of my favorite qualities of theirs, and they showed this really consistently throughout both the team event and the individual, is, like, how much they both smile throughout their programs and how much their happiness to be skating shows so brightly. Like, every single picture of them from their programs is just them smiling. And not, like, in such a natural way. I think if you've listened to either the women's or men's episodes, because I was on both, you've probably heard me rant about how much I love when skaters, like, let their positive emotions break through their performance and show on their faces. You know, even in the case that it might not perfectly fit their programs, you know, Riku and Ryuichi's programs might not exactly call for bright smiles, but, like, it still just shows, like, you know, their natural joy and passion for skating, and it, like, I can't help but smile along with them. And get emotional with them whenever they do, because they were very emotional after their free skate, and it was very nice to see.
And I appreciate that they are really able to quickly bounce back, even when they make mistakes. They have done this before, every single time, like, you know, she falls on a throw lots or something, but then they get up, and they don't let the program go. I think that's, like, one of the most important things in skating is being able to kind of hold it down even when something goes awry. Same thing happened with Sui and Han, you know, with the Sals. Like, they could have let it all go there, but they kept it, held it, didn't let that mistake affect them and move on. I mean, that was, like, what I said was one of the main problems with Taras and Morozov, is they let the program go when they make a mistake, but Riku and Ryuichi never do that. They have the most wholesome expressions when they finish programs.
I know. Like, their smiles are just so pure.
It just feels very much like, I can't believe we did that. You know, like, I'm so thankful to be here. I'm so thankful. Like, that's just, like, the feeling that I get when I watch them. And they just look, like, happy to be here, basically.
Literally, like, they're like the "I'm just happy to be here" meme.
Her idol is Sui Wenjing. So, I mean, you can imagine where her fire and her passionate comes from. And it's funny to me because when my parents were watching the pairs event, I swear to God, I didn't even prompt her, but when Riku and Ryuichi were skating, she was just like, oh, that girl, she kind of looks like Wenjing, like, with her hair, like, with a bob. And I was like, literally, that's her idol. Like, she would be so happy to hear you say that, because that, like, Wenjing is her idol.
I think almost all us, like, figure skating fans, like, that know of them, Riku and Ryuichi are one of our most anticipated skaters to watch in the next quad, and for good reason.
JSF, please, please invest in them. Please invest in your pairs. Oh my gosh, like, who knows, in 4 years, like, Japanese team gold, like, it's within our grasp. invest in your pairs and your ice dance disciplines. You have talent there that is waiting to be brought up and nurtured. Let's talk about the U.S. pairs for a little bit. So this is one of the more successful outings for the U.S. pairs. Having two pairs in the top 10 at the Olympics is considered a huge accomplishment for this program. So good for them.
They have not had that since 1998. Honestly, I'm still a bit surprised about Kinnearum and Fraser, who placed sixth behind, you know, Russia and China, the two most dominant countries in pair skating. You know, they're still a relatively new team, and, you know, they've, you know, been new through the pandemic. They have a really good trajectory, and it's like I think they have a lot of promise. And, you know, Kane Gribble and LeDuc, who placed eighth, they're still doing well themselves. And I think that it's kind of going to be interesting to see them compete domestically. On the topic of Kane Gribble and LeDuc, like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Timothy, who is the first openly non-binary Windsor athlete. And I just want to give a shout out to them for, you know, not only, like, you know, coming out in, as non-binary in a sport that, and a sport and a discipline that places so much emphasis on, you know, the gender binary and the separation of genders, but for them to make it to the Olympic stage, you know, for all the world to see and be inspired by it. It means a lot to me and other figure skating fans who identify as non-binary. And it's also really, really amazing and nice to see Timothy go to the Olympics, obviously, do, you know, relatively well. And they have so much support from Ashley and the rest of Team USA. And it's just like, that was a bright light for me here, is seeing all the support come out for them.
Yeah, I really appreciated seeing all of the support for them as well. And as you said, that this sport very much does not treat anything, any deviation from the norm very kindly usually. And, you know, for them to still shine in spite of that, and in spite of, honestly, a lot of people in the figure skating community even pushing back on their identity and on their person, basically. So it has been nice to see that they've been still getting some support from, at least from, you know, Team USA, and that it seems like they had a good time at the Olympics too. So I'm glad.
Mm-hmm. Which is nice to see. I like Kane Gribble and LeDuc as a team.
No, they're super impressive. Like doing side-by-side triple loops.
I feel like they have a unique connection.
Yeah. Fun little anecdote. I was messaging Ashley after Skate Canada this past year in 2021, because I posted basically a photo of their, after the victory ceremony, we had a bunch of people holding pride flags and non-binary flags at them, and Timothy saw and gave us a heart, and I took a photo of that moment basically and put it on my Instagram story, and Ashley saw it and, you know, asked for some photos, and I gave some photos and stuff, and I was mentioning how I really loved watching them skate and they did so well there, and I really love, you know, she also saw that I had posted a photo of like the podium and the little elbow bumps with Sway and Han, who were, I was saying, like, you know, they're like my favorite team, but I really love your skating too, because
they're,
you know,
so authentic, feeling themselves.
Yeah, I had also mentioned something about how like the height difference was so funny to me, because I think they took a selfie. I do believe they took a selfie with Sway and Han in the kiss and cry after the medal ceremony there. I had mentioned something about that, and she had replied like, oh yeah, but like, you know, our height differences between the partners are the same, like between Timothy and Ashley and Sway and Han are the same, even though the size difference between the two teams are so different. So
that's really funny. They're like both so authentically themselves, whether it be being non-binary or being really tall.
Right.
But on the topic of U.S. pairs, we want to compare and contrast them with Canadian pairs, who for the first time since 1980, Canada did not win any figure skating medals. And it's just kind of like, Canadian pairs have always been a decently strong force, both in general and at the Olympics. And like here, you know, the highest result was Moore Towers and Marinero, who literally made 10th by 0.01.
It's safe to say that after 2018, the Canadian skating field in general just completely dried up. And, you know, As for the medals, you know, that's, again, caveat that the team event results, if they stand as well, like, we're assuming that they stand right now, but they're in fourth currently, so who knows what'll come out of the arbitration, so, you know, who knows.
But for now, like, they have nothing.
We'll just talk about the pairs here in tandem, but, I mean, part of the reason why there was a lot of frustration with the... or frustration associated with the decision to send Vanessa James and Eric Radford over Evelyn Walsh and Trent Michaud is because there is value in fostering your younger talent. And Canada did not do that properly. They focused a lot on their veterans for a long time, and all of their veterans retired at the same time, basically, after the last Olympics. And I mean, the last Olympics was so successful for Kennedy in skating. They won the team gold. They got bronze in ladies. They got the ice dance gold. They got the pairs bronze. From 4 medals, 2 bronze, 2 gold, to 0 medals is... that's a drop-off.
You know, they have a decently strong force in men's with Keegan, I think. But, like, you know, ladies, like, they struggled with their ladies scene over the past quad so much.
And honestly, with pairs, too, it's like Kirsten and Michael have placed on podiums, right? They've placed on Grand Prix podiums. They almost won 4 continents in 2019. They have had teams that can compete, you know, top 10 in the world, etc. But... there is something to be said, too, also for fostering your younger talent, like Evelyn and Trent. And they could have gotten a lot of valuable experience competing at these Olympics. I mean, the thing is that, like, Vanessa is 34, Eric is 37. Are they going to make it another 4 years competitively? I mean...
it is highly unlikely.
I was just watching as Eric struggled through those lifts this entire season. I don't even know, like... was it worth it?
Yeah, and also the fact that Vanessa and Eric weren't at nationals.
Right. I mean, you know, just the thought of, like, pushing aside a younger, promising team that earned that spot. Because Evelyn and Trent earned that spot. That second spot at Worlds, so...
it was really disappointing, and it's really embarrassing for Canada.
Yeah, and I can only hope that they, like, reconsider this decision. And, again, I don't... honestly, I don't... no, I don't know if Eric and Vanessa plan to go on. I don't see them going on for another 4 years.
Definitely not another quad, yeah.
Vanessa will be 38, Eric will be 41. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that we all hope that after they performed so well at Canadian Nationals that it would only lead up to a stronger performance here at the Olympics. But, you know.
There has been an update. The ITA, the International Testing Agency, has reported that a sample collected from Spanish pairs figure skater Laura Barquero has returned an adverse analytical finding, an AAF, which we talked about a little bit when we reported on Camila's case. The AAF returned for the non-specified prohibited substance Clostebol. It was collected during an in-competition anti-doping control on February 18th, 2022, during the pair skating short program. And the result was reported by the WADA, or World Anti-Doping Agency, accredited laboratory in Beijing on February 21st, 2022. The athlete, Laura Barquero, has been informed of the case and has the right to request the analysis of the B sample, something we have also discussed. Nothing else really has been announced about it. It was just announced that she did test positive for Clostebol, and it has since been referred to the anti-doping division of the Court of Arbitration for Sport for adjudication under the IOC anti-doping rules applicable to the Olympic Games Beijing 2022.
Our last couple of shout-outs for pairs.
Yeah, Haas and Siegert, gotta shout them out too. Always been a really promising team this past quad. We've heard a lot about them.
They've been, like, you know, working hard, been around for a lot this past quad.
Like, really, really fantastic team. But that, like, COVID, with Nolan Siegert getting COVID, like, the day before the team event started, I think, something like that. And having to quarantine for 10 days, can't go anywhere. And you know that in skating, like, even 2 days off ice means, like, you, like, lose, like, basically half to, like, 80% of, like, your competitive stamina. I mean, in the free, is like, 2 aborted lifts, and he looked like he was... just went absolutely winded, but, you know, he was a quarantine for 10 days. What can you do? I mean, I'm sure that for them, it's probably just happy to be there. Happy to be able to compete. I mean, at least they were able to compete. They were lucky, so lucky that the diagnosis was before the Olympics started, and pairs was the last event. So, but overall, what a great event, right?
Yeah, pairs, I think, was like the best.
Definitely. Did it save for the Olympics for you? I think it saved the Olympics a little for me.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah, like, it eclipsed all the other events, like.
I mean, there was just a lot of despair, and especially because the definitive worst, I think, everyone unanimously agreed that the ladies was the worst.
And this followed it.
I think we all really, 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 really needed it. I know that a lot of the pairs were very, very anxious, like Soyeon Han mentioned, being, like, really anxious about having to, like, wait all of this, like, 2 weeks or something to compete, especially because they competed the first day and the last day, so it's, like, wow, they really just, like, had to hold it down by themselves for a while.
Yeah, thank you, pairs, for giving us a good event.
Yeah, a nice conclusion to a very tumultuous figure skating event at the Olympics, so.
Yeah, this is our last episode of Olympic coverage, and, like, thank God. I'm so tired.
Same.
I want to sleep.
Oh, me too. I'm taking this week off. For real.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna rest, and I'm not gonna think about figure skating, and I'm going to play with my new puppy.
Yes! Oh my gosh, yes. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you again for our next episode, which might be a while since I think we all need to sleep post-Olympics, but we'll be back for Worlds.
Thank you to our transcribing and quality control team, Evie, of course, for editing, and Gab for graphic design.
If you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to contact us via our website in thelowpodcast.com or on our Twitter. You can find our episodes on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.
If you enjoyed the show and you want to help support the team, then please consider making a donation to us on our Ko-fi page, and we want to give a huge thank you to all the listeners who have contributed to our team and supported us thus far. You can find the links to all our social media pages and our Ko-fi on the website.
And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating and review if you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. This has been Kat
and Car. Goodbye.
Bye.